This is 11-7-89, interview with Katie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Overweight. In the Counseling Center, Michigan State University.
My name is Katie Overweight. I'm 18 years old and a sophomore at Michigan State. My major is math, and my home address is 9515 Peak Road, Portland, Michigan.
Okay. Let's begin with something simple. If you could just describe your what Portland is like, where you lived, what the neighbors were like, what the trees on the block were like, etc.
Okay, I lived in the country, probably 3 miles out of town. The neighbors, the closest neighbors, are about 200 feet or so. It's pretty secluded. You know, we have a pool in their backyard and a lot of fields and cornfields and trees, and there's a forest out in our backyard, and I don't know, we have neighbors right across the street from us too. We have a dirt road, makes it really difficult to keep our cars clean. Portland is a really small town, has about a Class B school size. The town is predominantly white. We don't have any other ethnic cultures in Portland. It's just a nice, small, everyone knows each other kind of town, you know.
Do you like that feeling?
Yeah, it's really comfortable and really safe and secure. It's different, a lot different from when you move away to a place like this where it's all, you don't know anyone and you have to try to live with people that you've never even met from different cultures and, you know, different settings.
Can you talk a little bit about the background of your parents, what they did or what they do?
My father is a high school principal in Portland. He started out as a teacher, taught history and stuff, and then he moved to Eden Rapids, and he was an assistant principal there, and now he's principal in Portland. My mom is a surgery nurse, and she works in Ingham right now. They both went to the same high school, and they were like 2 years apart, and they were high school sweethearts, and they just got married, I guess, and had us.
Brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother who's 21, and he goes to school here. He lives in Cedar Village, and I have a younger brother who is 13, and he's in eighth grade in Portland.
So you've always lived in Portland, is that?
I lived in Eden Rapids, which is a little bit south of Lansing, till I was in through fifth grade, and then I moved to Portland starting my sixth grade year. The summer before sixth grade, I moved to Portland, yeah.
Well, having grown up in a family where your mother was, or your father was a principal, or is a principal, and your mother is obviously well-educated, there must have been quite a bit of emphasis on education.
Yeah, yes.
Can you describe the influence they had?
They really never pushed us. I don't know if it's more subtle or what, but as long as I've known, I've always enjoyed school. I've always felt comfortable in school. I've always done well in school. And same with both my brothers. I feel kind of, I don't know, pressured to do well. I'm not really pressured as much as by them, but by myself. And I think maybe they contributed to what I push myself to do just by their influence, I guess.
Were you having a tough act to follow in your older brother?
No, he was kind of having a tough act following me, except for when I came here. Because, well, in high school and stuff, we always competed for grades, you know, just, you know, how siblings do, I guess. And and I always won. And, you know, he did well, too. He just never put the time and the effort into it. And I did that. And then we came here, and he's given me quite a hassle about losing to him in the grade situation for 3 terms now, because his grades have been better than mine. Of course,
What's his major?
Elementary education. I know. Mine's math. Well, it's education, too. It's going to be. I guess I'm going to be a teacher, too.
Oh. And how about you have a younger brother.
Younger brother, yeah. About his competitiveness or...
How did he fit into the family?
He was more like, more of something I had to kind of control. I don't know. I felt kind of like his mother or something, you know? As he gets older, though, it's neat to see him grow up. I don't know, I just...
Yeah, do you have essentially a fond memory of your childhood?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a really good childhood, a really nice childhood. My parents are great people. And, you know, I realize that more as I grow up, and I see all the stuff that they did for me and how they, you know, made, you know, all their sacrifices that they gave, you know, for me.
Did you sense in any way that they were, quote, sacrifices at the time? Did they ever lay that line on you, I'm sacrificing for you?
Never, never. I never remember, I never remember feeling bad about if we didn't have money or I never felt any pressures about anything. They never, you know, if there was any problems, they never let us kids know. They never, and now I look back and I'm just like, oh my God, how'd you guys make it? And they're like, well, you know, all we did was we just, you know, hope that something would work out. But they still, even now that, you know, I know they're putting 2 kids through college, they must be just have this tremendous burden. But they don't really let it show very much.
Are you working at all?
Yeah, I work in the teacher education department in Erickson Hall about 12 hours a week or so.
What do you do there?
I'm a secretary, a student secretary. I answer the phones and type and file and run errands and that kind of stuff. There's a permanent secretary that works there, and I help her out mostly.
How many people were in your graduating class in Portland?
150, 152 or something.
So you must have known most of them by name.
Mm-hmm. At least if not by name, by face. I knew practically everyone.
All right, there you are. You've graduated, and did you come directly to Michigan State from Portland?
Mm-hmm.
Small school, and then suddenly you find yourself immersed in this mass of ethnicity, 10,000 freshmen, and what in the world? How did you handle this?
I stressed a lot. I'm not very good at dealing with stress. I just, day to day, I had a friend that helped me a lot. He did the same thing like the year before. He was a sophomore last year and I was a freshman. And he was basically, it's okay, you're going to be okay, you know, every day. And my parents helped me out a lot. They always talked to me and it was hard, but it was okay, you know.
Describe that first period in your dorm, your roommates, and who you were thrown together with, and was that a shock?
Well, I was really lucky to be put with the people I was. The girl that's my roommate, that was my roommate last year, she's, you know, really great. The people that were on my floor, everyone was really nice and really, I guess, really great. It was hard to live with people that I didn't know for the first time. You know, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you meet them, hi, I'm your roommate, let's live together for 9 months, you know. And, you know, you have a lot of little situations, you know, if she studies with the TV on and you don't, it tends to be kind of a problem.
Was that a problem?
Yeah, usually I just left the room. I'd go study somewhere else. We kind of kept, we made
When she would turn the TV on instead of you, had to leave the room?
Yeah.
Don't you think that's unfair? Why couldn't she get a set of headphones?
Yeah. I just felt that it was easier. A lot of times it's easier to do things like leave than it is to make, you know, to make waves. It would have been a lot of hassle for her, you know. And a lot of times I would just say, you know, can we turn this off for, you know, an hour? And then we just both study without, you know, without it on. Or we usually worked it out. I don't know, maybe I'm just an easy person to live with just because I don't know, it really didn't bother me to leave.
Well, maybe this can be attributed to the fact that you grew up with an older brother and a younger brother.
Uh-huh, and you just have to kind of compromise and, I guess.
What other, can you be a little bit more specific in terms of making that adjustment in the first year, difficulties that you may have had, or not just negative things, positive right. and negative things of incidents which occurred that first year, which fears you may have had, or which were overcome? And
one of the biggest things is that you have to come here and you have to get used to being behind, and you have to get used to not doing as well as you know as you'd hoped. I came in here thinking I was gonna do sweet. I did really well in high school. I was the valedictorian, and when I was in high school, I didn't really have to work hard for my grades. I put some effort, but not nearly as what I could have. And I came here and I was thrown with all these people that were smart. When I was in high school, there were smart people, but there weren't like here where everyone's smart. And you just have to learn that you're not just gonna slide through without doing any work. You've got to really work hard, and you have to do a lot more studying and just learn to relax if things don't go your way. You know, you just got to learn to take it and say, well, you know, I blew that test.
Well, so you had to really reevaluate your own intelligence.
Yeah.
You thought your capability was here. You got in a highly competitive group and suddenly realized you were no longer at the top of the heap.
Yeah, basically.
And that was a shocker.
Yes.
Do you think this is typical, this type of adjusted, this person that helped you experience this?
Yeah, he did too, because he was at the top of his class too, and he came here and was just overwhelmed. And I think it's, I don't know, for the math, I don't know, maybe it's not for, but I know that math and sciences here are very difficult, and when the program I came out of in high school didn't prepare me as well as I should have been prepared. And it's such a change to come from where they hold your hand through your assignments, and if you don't understand it, they'll stop and reteach it, to come here and have them say, well, you're supposed to already know this, and go on. And it's really hard to adjust. It was really hard to adjust. It took me like a year.
Do you feel that you have lower self-esteem now than when you were in high school?
I think I have more realistic self-esteem. I now look at myself and I can see what I can do. And I, like when I was in high school, I thought I could do anything because I had this super ego or something. And now I know that it's not going to be that easy. I think I have a higher self-esteem just because I really think that I know what I can do now.
Well, from your description of high school, it sounds as if it was not particularly challenging.
It wasn't.
And in hindsight, do you think it should have been more demanding? Or?
Yes. I think it should have been more demanding. But I understand how in high school they have to teach to the majority of people. And if you're above that or below that, then you're bored. I had most of my friends, we were bored in our classes. And I enjoyed high school, But I never felt challenged, just because most of the stuff, it wasn't that difficult. And I know a lot of people that thought it was difficult. I
mean, well, you're getting into education. We'll probably teach math at some point.
Yeah.
And if you do this on a high school level, you're going to be confronted with the same basic problem. Mm-hmm. How do I cater to the top 20 and the bottom 20? Do I have a watered-down a program which really doesn't challenge, which is too challenging for the lower half, not challenging enough for the top half, and sort of wishy-washy for those in the middle?
Right.
How are you going to solve that?
I don't know. I don't know. Unless you can get away where you could split the class up a little bit more or something. In our school system that we never had enough money to actually have an upper level math and a middle level math and a lower, you know. We just basically had people who would take math and people who didn't. If you didn't take, you know,
Do you go back and visit some of your old friends that you had in high school who still may be hanging around Portland who may not have gone on to college?
Most of my friends went away to college. I really don't associate that much with many of my friends from high school. Most.
You say most. Out of 150, mm-hmm. How many went to college? About half? Two-thirds?
Oh, I would say maybe two-thirds. Or, maybe about 50. That's one-third. Maybe about 50 at the most.
But now when you go back to Portland and you drive down the main street or walk down the main street, mm-hmm. What are your feelings now as compared to what they were when you were 14 or 15?
The world's a lot bigger place. It's not like it is there. When I was that age, I just thought that the whole world was exactly like Portland. Everything, you know, it could never change. And now I go back and it's such a small town now, you know. When I was there, Portland was big and it was... And now I look back at it, and it's gotten smaller.
Well, do you have a fondness for the old lady who works behind the counter in the Five and Dime or who serves up the hamburgers in that famous hamburger place?
Yeah.
Is there a nostalgia trip there at all?
Yeah. A lot of memories, you know, driving through the 7-Eleven. That was the old hangout place. So now when you go through the 7-Eleven and you see the 14-year-olds that hang out there, you're thinking, wow, I was never that young. And I don't know, it's really, yeah, a lot of memories.
Well, you're about the 25th student I've interviewed, and I've gotten an amazing array of tales of what it is to adjust to freshman life, where some students have gone completely bonkers, have lost it, free from their families for the first time. They've drunk too much. They've just done everything crazy. And most of them settled down after a year.
Right.
And you were part of this, actually, living in a freshman dorm, mm-hmm. right? Which dorm?
I lived in Hubbard.
Hubbard. So you, I don't know, can you talk a little bit about what was going on around you, the extent to which you may have been sucked in by all that, and what the peer pressure was on you to go out and have a drink and how you fought that and all of the distractions which you had as a freshman, which prevent many freshmen from studying, for example. How'd you handle all that?
Oh, a lot of times I just went with it. There's a lot of pressure to drink and to go out and to have fun and to neglect your studies. It's really hard just to sit home on Thursday nights when everyone else is getting ready for the bar and getting ready to go to this party even this year it's still really difficult. I've had many times where I'm like, I'm gonna study this Thursday, I'm gonna go down and I'm gonna sit in that morgue and I'm gonna do my work. And then people are like, come on, just go up to the third floor for 20 minutes. And you just have to...
Do you go?
Yeah, mostly. Most of the times I go. But, you know, if I have something that I really needs to be done, then that comes first, and you just have to set your priorities and really go by them. Because I have sat home Thursday nights, and or even, you know, like Halloween was a big party night. Everyone was going out, and I had a major test the next day. And you just have to say, what is more important to me? This is what I'm at school for. I just need to do well.
Now you say Thursday night. Is this every Thursday night?
Every Thursday night. That's the big
night.
What
about Friday and Saturday night?
Friday night is okay, and Saturday night's okay too. Thursday night's the big night, though. I don't understand why, and I never understood it before either. I think it's just because everyone's getting psyched for the weekend, and after you've had a long week of classes and a long week of papers and tests and everything just thrown at you, you just need an extra day to relax, and that's the night that just happens to be the night to go out.
Do you feel that this is too much of a party school? In terms of what you've experienced and seen?
Sometimes I think that. But then I don't know what it's like at other colleges. I haven't really visited any other colleges, and so I don't know if maybe this is a less party school than some other places, or it's more of a party school. It seems that a lot of people party here a lot. Like, that's one of the major things, and I know it shouldn't be, and I know it's wrong, but that's the way it is, you know.
Did you look at those questions?
Yeah.
Did you bring your own copy? Because I have a copy.
Yeah, I did.
You don't. Before we get into that, why were you interested in participating in this specifically?
Because it's a way to socialize. That's the way a lot of the social action happens here, and I like to be around people, and I like people to be around me, and I like to have fun, and that's the way it happens a lot of times around here.
What I meant was, why did you want to participate in this particular interview?
Because
out of that entire class, there were only a handful that signed up.
Because I think it's interesting. I think that people need to know a lot about college that people don't tell about. There's a lot that, there's a lot of misconceptions. When I had no idea when I came to college that it was going to be like this, I thought it was just going to be really easy, and I thought it was going to be a lot of fun, and I didn't think it was going to be that hard. And I don't think that parents even know what it's going to be like, or anyone. Until you get there, until you're in that situation, you don't know. And it's a lot more than just studying and trying to deal with everything. It's just your pressures. You have so many outside pressures. If you have to work, if you have to try to, you know, pay for your classes, if you have to, there's a lot of, you know, roommate situations. You know, you're trying to live with these people for the first time, or, you know, you've never met them before, and a lot of people don't understand how hard that can be.
Being a little more specific, why, though, did you choose to discuss these things here now? I stood up in front of the class and I said, anyone interested, sign up. You were only one of the half a dozen or so who signed up, which suggested to me that you were motivated to, that you wanted to talk about some of these things.
I just know how hard of a time I had, and if I could make it easier for someone else just by saying some little thing, I don't know, maybe it would make it easier for them.
You want to share?
Yeah. I want to share. Share my experiences.
Yeah, that's a kind of a cliche, isn't it?
Yeah.
Were there questions on that questionnaire that you feel strongly about? Because you should also look at this hour or so as a time to talk about things which you feel articulate about, which really matter to you. Did you go through it at all?
Or? Yeah, I went through this. Do you want me to talk about one of these questions or something?
Well, I'll just stop a little bit. The whole issue of the me generation, the fact that today's collegians seem to be labeled more egotistical than other generations for some reason. Do you feel that that's true? Do you have any perspective of it? Have you thought about what the students might have been like in the 1960s as opposed to now and whether they were more or less idealistic, et cetera?
I think a lot of college students today are, all they care about is themselves and their money and what they're going to do, you know, with the rest. I personally am not like that. I didn't choose my profession for the money. I personally chose it because I want to have a family and I'd like to teach, and I don't know, but a lot of people here believe all they want is their money. And in the 60s, it seems like people were concerned about the ozone and the war and more about the politics. And it seems like everyone here just wants to get through and get their law degree and make a lot of money so they can be rich.
How did you arrive at that conclusion? Is this based on general conversations that you've had or what?
Yeah, basically. And I don't know, one time I was in a class, it was my math class this year, and it's full of engineers. And someone asked me what my major was, and I said, math, it's going to be education too. And they said, well, why would you want to do that? You're not going to make any money. And I just wanted to say, also, that our whole lives, is that the only thing that's important in our whole lives is money? I mean, and I said, well, is that the only reason you're going to be an engineer? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, don't you even like it at all? Aren't you even interested in it? Are you just doing it just for the money? And I know another guy that said to me, because he said he wanted to be a teacher, and I said, oh, that's great. And then a couple weeks later said, I'm going to change my major to advertising. And I was like, why? Because teaching, I think, is a great profession. I don't know. And he said, because there's no money in teaching, and I can't really make any money. And I just think that's horrible if you have to choose what you're going to do for the rest of your life.
Well, you think that this really is a prevalent attitude among the current crop of collegians.
I think so.
How did you escape it?
I don't know. Maybe when I was little, I never had felt that money was that big of a deal. It was more important to be happy. And I still feel that way. I think I'd rather be happy in my life. I'd rather be happy and poor than miserable and rich.
And happy meaning?
Comfortable with people I love and with a family and, I don't know, doing things I'd like to do. Not doing something I have to do. Because that just seems, for 30 years or so, how many ever years you work, that's a long time to being something you don't like to do just for the money.
So if you project yourself in the future 10 years and you defined what you were doing, where you were living, be specific. Where are you going to be in 10 years?
Probably I'll be teaching a math class or a science class in a high school, probably class B or C, around the Lansing area or maybe near the lake, near Lake Michigan, in a small school over there. I'll probably be married and have kids by then, probably two kids by then, because I plan on getting married in 3 years or so, and then I want to wait and have a couple kids. And so,
do you think the challenges for women are exceptionally difficult in this era, in view of the fact that so many want not only a family and a fulfilling relationship with a man, but also want to pursue a career and be successful in that?
Yeah, I think it's very hard for women because you have to, you're kind of, not only are you supposed to do the things that my grandparents did, my grandma did, clean the house, cook the meals, take care of the children, you're also expected to make a living. And that's like having two jobs, because that, I just think it's really difficult for, I think it'd be difficult to do that, and I'll probably have a difficult time doing it.
Where are you going to find a guy who's willing to chip in and do a little bit of the cooking and change the diapers?
Oh, I think I found him. He's, my boyfriend is very liberated. I don't know if I think it's liberated or he cooks better than I do, so he'll probably do all the cooking. And he's great with kids, and so he'll probably, you know, I don't think we'll have very much of a problem with that.
Suppose he said, I think I'll stay home and take care of the kids and do the cooking, and you go out and earn the bread. Would that be acceptable?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I'd feel like I was missing out on the growth of my children, I guess. But I think it'd be kind of cool to have a husband who stayed home, who was a house husband or whatever.
Reverse roles.
Yeah.
The image of a husband who did that wouldn't bother you.
No, not at all. I think it'd be pretty cool.
And at parties, when he said, people asked him, "What do you do?" and he answered by saying, "Well, I'm a house husband." That wouldn't.
Not at all. I think a lot of women would probably be like, "Where'd you find him? You know, how'd you land such a catch?" Yeah. You know.
Well, that's interesting. Things have changed, haven't they?
Yeah, I guess so.
For the better, in that sense.
Yeah.
I think. Well, getting back to that page, you said that maybe there was a question there that piqued your interest a little. Is that right?
Yeah.
Which one?
It says, if you attain your goals, does it mean you'll be able to eliminate your tension, the tensions and frustrations of life? I just thought that, no, I think that just, I won't be able to eliminate them. They'll just change the tensions and frustrations, because I know now as long as I've ever been alive, I've always been a person who's always frustrated, very tense, I don't know, very stressed and very worried about things. And I don't think that when I get married and have kids and get a job, anything will change. I'll just worry about different things. I'll worry about my kids, or I'll worry that I'm not being an adequate teacher, or I worry about not being an adequate wife, or, you know, a lot of
So you've things. Accepted tension as a necessary condition of life.
Yeah, for me at least.
Yeah. We never mellow out.
Each person's different in their own level of acceptability or whatever of things. And I know that I'll never change. I know I'll be the same. I know I'll be a very worrying and stressed kind of person, I guess.
Well, that brings up the next question, which is, when you do something well, can you pat yourself on the back? Do you take credit for it?
I've learned to. Before, I usually blew it off and said, oh, well, that's expected. And since I've had to work harder for things, it's more of an accomplishment for me to do well in classes and things. And
you blew it off and said that was expected.
Yeah.
Meaning what?
I really didn't congratulate myself or whatever. I said, well, you know, that was expected of you. To myself, I said, you should have done that well. It really wasn't.
Where does this come from, though? This is a strong attitude that many people have towards themselves, an inability to recognize when they've achieved something.
Where does inability?
Where does that, that's rooted in something?
I don't know. I just think that maybe people are hard on themselves maybe they want to excel and they feel like that's the way to do it. I don't know.
Did this come from your parents, are they the sacrificing types?
I don't know. I don't think that they, maybe they subconsciously did it. They never really said to me, well, you're not good enough, you know, you, they actually always, when I would do really well in school, I'd get all A's or whatever, they'd always say, Katie, you did a great job, you know.
But do you sense that they sense in themselves a sense of satisfaction when they've done something well?
I never really noticed. I'd probably not. I would think not. Because I know when my dad does things well, he doesn't really say, well, I did that well, didn't I? You know, doesn't really talk about things like that. And I know
Well, not that he would have to verbalize it, but you can sense when somebody is happy with what they've done.
I guess he's always been happy about what he's done. He's always seemed proud enough of it, I guess. I don't know.
What I'm really trying to get at is why, in your particular case, you had to learn to take more self-esteem for your efforts. And that learning apparently took place fairly late.
Yeah.
Whereas some people have that sense of self-esteem and at a very early age, and it just continues to build. It's not...
I don't know where I got it.
So, your answer to that question really is the tension is there for a lifetime.
It'll just change. It'll be a different kind of tension or different attention directed in a different area. But, yeah, it's there for your life.
Well, have you regarded the university basically as a place where you are acquiring a trade? Or do you plan to... You're a sophomore now, right?
Right.
Do you plan to really take advantage of the many different types of courses? Perhaps go to college for an extra year so that you have an opportunity to... study more? Are you just going to keep your focus straight and narrow and go through, complete the course?
That's probably what I'll do, is I don't have enough time and my parents don't have enough money to really spend a lot of time for me here. I'm already going to have to go an extra term just because my class loads have to be kept down or I'll go nuts. No, I'll probably just go and take the courses I need to graduate. I'd like to take other courses. I'd like to look into other things. I just don't see that I have any time to do it.
Do you have, on the priority list, where is your desire to travel, to live and work in a big city, to experience something outside of the scope of something defined like Portland? Or is it going to be college, marriage, teaching, and settling down in the small hometown environment?
It's going to be college, and my family life and teaching and stuff. I might like to travel. I don't think I like to be home away from home that much. I like my family. I get along really well with my family. I really don't have any desire to live in a big city. Maybe a Lansing-sized city or a Grand Rapids-sized city, but not something like New York or Los Angeles.
Are you interested in the arts at all?
Not really.
The performing arts or the fine arts?
I think they interest me because I can't do them. And so I think they're interesting to watch and they're interesting to enjoy, but I'm not interested in performing because
you don't want to be an actor.
No.
And I don't want to be in a high school play.
I was in a high school play one time, but it was fun, but it wasn't, I'm not that artistic. I have a hard time getting up and saying, pretending I'm something else, I guess. I don't know.
Which side of the brain is it that controls the technical side?
Right brain, I think, maybe.
Isn't one side controls the creative impulses or drives the creative, and the other side
is the more
technically oriented, logically
oriented.
And
that's what I am. I'm more logically, more technically.
I think I have zero creativity. You don't feel the pull on the creative side.
I have zero creativity. I'd like to be able to draw and to paint and to be a musician. I think that's really, I just have a lot of respect for people that can do that because I find it so hard. And I just think that's wonderful that, wow, that someone can actually paint and make it look like something other than a stick figure.
But when you analyze the ability in mathematics, your particular ability or someone else who may be very gifted, there are a lot of creative or intuitive leaps being made there too. What is it that makes person A find the solution to a problem that much faster than person B? It isn't just that one person has memorized the multiplication tables.
No.
So what's going on there on a creative level?
I just think, I don't know, maybe they're able to see more clearly what is actually going on. Because a lot of math is in graphs and in pictures. You know, you have to be able to understand what is happening. Maybe they can see that better.
Do you feel gifted in that area?
Sometimes. Sometimes not. It really depends. If I study hard enough, I feel gifted. If I know what I'm talking about, I feel gifted. When I first learn it, it's hard, and I don't. Yeah. I feel like I'm stupid again or something.
So you've run into some bright people in your field.
Yes, very bright people.
And that can be a little bit intimidating.
Yes, very. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's stop for. Have you worked at any other place than over in, what is it, Department of Education?
Yes.
Fast food chains?
I worked for Wonders Maintenance, Wonders Hall. I worked maintenance there for
What'd
two
you do?
Summers. Cleaned bathrooms, cleaned like the student dorms. I painted the walls, I stuccoed. That's like raised, like pointy paint, I guess. I don't know. I waxed the floors.
Are you handy?
Not really. I was okay. I was a hard worker, I guess. So I was okay.
Did you learn anything from those experiences? Or was it just a drag?
Yeah, I guess I did learn. It makes you know what you're going to college for, so you don't have to do that for the rest of your life. Because I can't do that. I couldn't do that. The second summer, I was a crew leader, I guess, for the paint crew. And so I learned to deal with people a lot, and I learned to have to be a authoritative figure, I guess.
Do you have an authoritative side? No. Does your voice change?
No. I have to work on that. That's going to be one of my major battles, I guess, or something.
So you had to crack the whip a little and say, why weren't you here at 8 o'clock?
Yeah, I had to do. And, you know, come on, you guys, you got to get back to work. You can't be sitting around. And I'm not a very mean person, or not mean, but I have a hard time being
assertive.
Assertive, yes.
What's going to happen when you want additional funds to have computers in your math lab and you have to lay it on the line for the principal? Are you going to be able to assert yourself?
You're going to
say,
so.
I'll let the art department have their budget. What are you going to do there?
I'll probably have to just push myself and do it. Because I know I can do things if I try hard enough and if I care about it enough. And if it really makes a difference to me, then I can do it. And I'll just tell myself, you have to do this. You know, if you want to make a difference and if you want to, you know, teach these kids what they need to know, then you have to get your funds. And the only way you'll do that is have to talk to the principal. And
yeah. How would you evaluate, if you were evaluating your own character, how would you list your strong points?
I try really hard. I'm kind of dedicated, I think. And And if something is important to me, I would do anything to see that it happens or to get it done, I guess.
And your weak points?
I'm not very assertive. I know I have a lot of weak points and I just can't think of them.
Maybe that's an unfair question.
Yeah.
All right, I'll just assume that you have them.
I have lots of weak points, yeah. Believe me.
Well, you strike me as being essentially very healthy and focused. But I don't know. You see, part of the problem with these interviews is that I have about an hour, and there's no way that another person is going to tell me a great deal in that time. Mm-hmm. Depends on the mood I catch them in, too. But you're going to pick this transcript. I'm going to supply you with a typed transcript of this, which I'll give you within the next three weeks or so.
Okay.
And you'll pick it up in 10 years and read it, maybe.
And I'll laugh.
Unless you've used it for sidewall insulation or something. And will you laugh, though? Because what would you like to read at that point? I'm really asking you to project yourself 10 right. years in the future.
I'd like to think that I've changed a lot in 10 years. I'd like to look back and say, boy, I was really naive there. You know, things are a lot different in the real world than they are, you know, than from what I thought then, I guess. And I don't know.
Well, that suggests that by that point, 10 years down the pike, you would have reached maturity, shall we call it?
Yeah, I guess so.
But what is there after then? Is this a process which would take place each 10 years of your life?
I'll just be old by then, I guess. I don't mature.
Is this true for all of us, though? Another 10 years go by and we look back. And do we say, I've grown and how naive I was?
Uh-huh.
Or do we say, I've gone downhill and I know less?
I would think that you'd learn more as you get older, you know, and the older you get, the more you're going to learn just because you've been here longer and you've gone through so many more experiences in those 10 years or whatever.
Don't most people get into ruts, though? You say this now because you've experienced tremendous growth from age 10 to age 20, and then from age 20 to age 30. But after the marriage and the job, don't we get locked in into a hopeless situation?
I don't know. It doesn't sound hopeless to me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You're still going to learn a lot about life, and maybe not as much in a certain amount of time, but I think you'll still learn, because you'll be able to look at your grandchildren or your children and see them grow up and learn from them too, kind of, I guess.
Is there any one instructor or professor or influence that you had that swung you around in a specific direction?
I was trying to think about this, and I think the thing that really made me turn around, and I was going to be a doctor because I wanted to make money and everything, and then I looked at my dad and his life, and when my brother and I were both in high school, my older brother and I were in high school together, and my dad was there, and we drove to school every day together, and we got ready in the bathroom together. It was so nice, and it was wonderful, and I could see that he enjoyed doing his job because he got to watch us grow up all day. You know, he got to be around his kids all day. And that's, to me, then I just realized that's the kind of life I want to have. I want to be able to enjoy myself. You know, I don't want to do it just for the money. I want to do it just for, you know, my being a doctor, all this prestige. I want to do it because I want to. And I think that I saw how much he enjoyed his life. And then I thought about how much I would enjoy that kind of life, too, and I think I'd.
So having a happy family life is high on the priority list.
Yes, yes. I think that has really made a difference in my life.
It's amazing. The girl I talked with yesterday had that lowest on her list. She just wants to be a journalist and nothing else.
I can't even imagine a life without my family. I mean, that's the most important thing right now. Well, right now.
Well, here's one, the one on page 6, question 6. The extent to which the current generation is a victim of wanting immediate gratification from anything they do. Mm-hmm. The whole pace of life, from getting the hamburger instantly at the hamburger joint to have we become a nation of impatient freaks? What's going on here?
I think that life has gone by so much. It seems to go so fast now, and you really don't have time to sit down and make a meal, and you just have so many other things that you need to do just to compete with everyone that, you know, you just want to, I don't know. I think that is true of today's society, and I don't particularly like it. But now everything is so. Maybe this ties in with the me thing, the me generation thing, that, you know, everyone wants to get ahead and everyone wants to, you know, make as much money as they can, and so, and the only way you can do that is if you work all the time, or if, you know, you're busy all the time. And that really, it cuts out a lot of your relaxing times and your,
What would you do to relax at home, or when you were younger in high school, what would the family do?
Watch TV, watch movies. That was about it. A lot of times my dad would read and my mom would do her little cross stitch, and we'd all just kind of hang out, I guess, if you call it, for lack of a better word, hang out.
So what do you do here to relax? Or do you have any time to
sleep?
Relax?
I don't have time to relax. I sleep.
Do you have any extracurricular activities you pursue?
I'd like to, but I don't have that much time. When I have the time, I usually either sit down and watch TV or talk to people, go visit people. Oh, I like to read, you know, if I have the chance. On the weekends when my boyfriend comes up, a lot of times we spend time with his mom and his baby sister who live in Lansing. Or we go spend time with my aunt and their twins, because she has twin boys that are...
In Portland?
No, she lives in Lansing too. She lives by off Aurelius, I think. And so we go over there and we play with her kids, or go over and see his little sister. Otherwise we watch movies, or I don't know, we just kind of, we're just together, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Have you, is there a humorous side to, over on page 7, the top of the page, in this grind to get an education, has there been some fun for you? Have there been some humorous sides? Do you get the sillies once a month and go screaming down the hallway?
Yeah, there's a lot of little things that you're just thinking, people are so crazy here. Maybe about once a week or so, we'll be sitting in a room and it gets to be like 11 and we're getting ready for bed and kind of just talking, like me and my roommates and stuff. And all of a sudden someone will yell out their window, like something like, I hate this school or something. And then everyone just starts in. Everyone in the whole dorm just starts yelling out their windows, just yelling things. And you're thinking, these people here are so weird. They're so crazy. I don't know. You do a lot of times just, I don't think there's any other way you can deal with all the pressures and everything unless you just go crazy. I had a time last year during exam week that a girl and I, we were studying for our calculus exam, and we went downstairs and got some coffee, and we were just laughing and about the stupidest things, and, you know, you just get to be giddy, I guess, and you just feel like you're going nuts. You feel like your brain is just about to explode, and it's kind of funny. It's a weird, I don't know.
Any water fights?
We had one time we had a shaving cream fight in our room.
Can you describe that?
In detail. I was walking down the hall, and my roommate came out of our room, with a can of shaving cream in her hand, and she came after me, and so I ran in this girl's room, and I shut the door, and then I'd come out, and because I wanted to get my shaving cream because, you know, I wanted to fight back, and I don't know. Then we would gang up on other people. We went across the hall, and we attacked this one girl, and she got so mad. But then, of course, she went and got her shaving cream and joined in too. I don't know. And then you just, times like that, you're just thinking, I can't believe we're doing this. Another girl got in on it, and she was trying just to be an accomplice. And we turned around. All of us had shaving cream in our hair and in our faces and on our clothes. And we looked at her, and she had nothing on her. And so we all decided just to grab her and hold her down and get her bad. It was fun.
You got her good?
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. I can't eat. Oh.
That goes on all over, doesn't it?
Yes. Last year, one of the halls, it was spring term. And I think spring term is more crazy than any time, because everything's coming alive again, and so everyone is just going nuts. One of the floors in Wonders, I think, had a slip and slide. They put a plastic tarp in the middle of their hallway, the length of their hallway, and poured detergent and soap and shaving cream and water and mixed it all up, and they went sliding down their hallway.
And you too?
I didn't do it. I read it in the paper, and I just laughed. I thought that was great.
Why didn't you do it?
I wasn't there. I didn't. Oh. I didn't know about it till after it happened.
You might have done it.
I would have done it if I was there.
Yeah.
Because it looked like fun. Mm-hmm. I love those things.
Anything you want to talk about? Or should I just ask you a few questions?
You can just ask me a few questions. Okay.
Over on page 3, in that profile prepared by the Division of Student Affairs, when I read that, 50% of the students said that they needed no improvement in those particular areas, the ones listed. Mm-hmm. I was somewhat startled.
Me too.
You want to comment on that?
I just think if they don't need any improvement in those areas, they must be pretty spectacular. I can't imagine anyone not needing to improve.
In all of those areas.
Right, in all of those areas. There's no way that anyone could ever. When I first read that, I thought that too. But then I thought about it more, and I said, wait a minute, need to improve. I need to improve in all of these. And I just think that, you know, you go through your whole life, and I don't think that you're ever going to be perfect in anything. And especially these areas, it just seems kind of idealistic to say that you need no improvement in these areas, and 50% of the people said it. That's a lot.
Maybe they wanted to get out of the testing room quickly and didn't pay much attention to the question. Because I have not yet a single student who didn't essentially say what you have.
Right.
Yeah. How about the professors here? Your evaluation of them. You must have come to college with a certain expectation of the quality of the teaching, and then you encountered something else.
When I was in high school, I had very good teachers who cared and who wanted to help, And it seems like when I came here that I didn't really find that in very many people. I've had probably 5 or 6 good professors that I thought were good.
Out of?
Out of maybe about 20 or so. And the rest of them were okay. You know, they knew their material and they knew what they were talking about. But they didn't seem to care about what they were doing. They were just kind of there. Like maybe they had, you know, they had teached too, they were burned out or something. They didn't seem like they really were interested in teaching it anymore. They were just doing it, you know.
How can a teacher relate to 200 people in a class?
I had a math professor that just did a great job, and he just was very accessible, and just the way he talked didn't make you feel intimidated. That's one of the hardest things, you know, you have these very intelligent people teaching these classes, and I'm sure it's hard for them to not look at these students and say, boy, you guys aren't even as close, you know, you aren't even as good as I am, you know. And it's really difficult to sit there in class and have someone have that attitude towards you. And when they don't have that attitude, it's great, you know, you're thinking, well, this guy really understands, he really understands what it's like to be a student. And I think that's why they were great. They were great professors because they cared about what you thought, and they didn't act like they were that much better than you. They didn't act like they, just because they knew the information and they knew what they were talking about, they were superior. They didn't have a superior attitude.
You can always pick up on that, can't you, a student?
Just
whether the professor wants to relate to you as another human being.
Right, right. It's really easy to really, I mean, just by even talking to them, not even in the class situation, just by, you know, sitting down and saying, can you explain this to me, or, you know.
How big was that class that you were in?
The good math class that I had, or the one, it was a large lecture hall. It probably had 300 people in it, 200, 300 people.
Did you ask questions?
I particularly didn't, but people did. I have a hard time going for help, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
But they...
Okay.
I don't think that college is a place just to learn the books, the, you know, information in the textbooks and the information, you know, presented in the class. I think it's more of a step to get you ready for the world and to get you ready to go on. You know, nowadays the kids are so, until you're 18 or, you know, 19, you're so dependent on your parents, you're dependent on them for everything. And then when college, if they just put you out in the world, if you just graduated and that was it, you graduate from high school and then had to make your own way, it'd be like putting a baby out and, you know, making it fend for itself. And I think college is kind of a step to teach you to be more responsible for yourself and teach you to, learn, teach you to be independent, but let you still be a little bit dependent on your parents, you know. I just think that there's a lot more in college to learn than just the stuff that they teach you in your classes. Because there's a lot of, learning to live with people and learning to deal with pressure and learning to seek help when you need to. Learning to deal with problems by yourself, you know, learning to, what other kinds of things.
Were you aware of this when you gave the speech at commencement high school?
No.
What did you talk about in that speech?
I talked about our past. I talked about mostly about high school and about, you know, how much fun we've had and how great of a time. I guess I talked more about the past than I did about the future. Because I really didn't know. I really didn't know about what college was going to be like in the rest of my life.
It's almost as if you're saying that the most important thing about college is the, what would you call it, the socialization you go through.
I think it is. Because you just, most of the stuff that I'm learning, you know, sure I'll need it, but a lot of it, I found that it's more just extra added information that I probably won't use. I'll just, you know, probably use it a little bit, but not very much. But most of the stuff that I'm learning here is to make me more independent, because I've become more independent in this last year than probably in my other, you know, my other years of life, when I was at home. So I just think that it's mostly just the growing up or something, just the growing up part that's the most important thing about college.